Okay, thanks very much. Door's still open. Maybe if we just want to shut that back door, we can get going. I'm Aaron Cutter. I'm from Finity Consulting, and you haven't come here to hear me speak. So what I'll do without further ado is introduce who you have come here to speak. We have Sylvia and Natalie. Sylvia Wong. So Natalie was at the last session that I chaired. Sylvia and Angeli. I beg your pardon. I'm so sorry, Angeli. Sylvia Wong's Senior Manager at PwC. 19 years experience in the general insurance and accident compensation space, and specialised in workers' comp, particularly New South Wales Treasury Managed Fund, since 1998. And Angeli is a Senior Manager at PwC also, in the actuarial and risk practice, and has worked with PwC for 13 years, providing advice to general insurers, self-insurers, accident compensation schemes, CTP, workers' compensation, public liability, medical indemnity, and also many other classes of business. So an extremely accomplished actuary.
Yes.
And the title of the presentation that Sylvia and Angeli have prepared for us is Unlocking the Possibilities, the Productivity Commission's Inquiry into, quote, Data Availability and Use, unquote, and the Implications for Injury and Disability Schemes. So please welcome
Angeli
to the microphone.
Thanks, Aaron, for reading out the title, so I don't have to because it is a bit of a tongue twister. So the Productivity Commission's report is 700 pages long, so it's not an easy read. Ours is only 25 pages long, so I think we should get a round of applause right now just for that. Thank you. So it's not an easy read, but it's well worth being across the key recommendations as they really spell out how serious the government should be about looking at the use of data with new eyes. The recommendations put the private and public sector on notice that they will need to get ready for the opportunities and challenges of this new data age. So I'm going to first start with an overview of the inquiry. We'll then discuss the current landscape of data in Australia, and then I'll summarise the key recommendations from the report, as well as the proposed timeline for implementation. Sylvia is then going to talk about the implications and opportunities for injury and disability schemes, as well as some of the challenges that will be presented should the recommendations be adopted. So the report was released in May this year, and the purpose of the inquiry was to consider the benefits and costs of options for increasing availability and improving the use of data, and it applied to public and private sector data. It also sought to identify ways consumers can better use data and consider ways to preserve privacy and control over data. It recommends comprehensive reform of Australia's data infrastructure, and the recommendations aim to build public confidence and trust in data use, raise the profile of data as an asset that should be leveraged for the common good, to bring Australia in line with other jurisdictions in terms of open data policies and skills, and to capitalise on the rapid growth of data generation and its usability. So it really signposts a shift in government attitude to data sharing. And governments across Australia are increasingly seeing the value and potential in making better use of data that they collect. Many jurisdictions are already taking steps to build data sharing regimes. So in some states and territories, data sharing legislation has been passed or is in the process of being passed. Data analysis hubs have been set up in some jurisdictions, and that's they have responsibilities for coordinating data storage, sharing and analysis, and in some territories and states they've also begun linking data across agencies within government. In this year's budget, the federal government committed an investment over 3 years into the Data Integration Partnership of Australia, DIPA, and the functions of DIPA include data linkage to create high-value, longitudinal national data sets that can be used to really deliver insights. The aim is to be able to drive evidence-based decision-making within government with a particular focus on social and economic welfare. And the government's really interested in using insights to identify and prevent risks of disability in the workplace and to support ongoing workforce participation for people with a disability. So at this stage, the proposed framework hasn't been adopted. It's still under consideration, so that's yet to be decided. So the inquiry spent a bit of time exploring the current landscape of data in Australia. And their key findings are not surprising. Data is being generated rapidly and the rate of generation is growing. The types of data is expanding and now includes information collected through internet activity, transactions and the Internet of Things and the sensors within those things. The types of data available include both structured and unstructured data, so that includes video, text, audio, log files, sensor data. And technological advances in computing power means that we can just do loads more stuff with all of this data. So despite there being so much data and capability to use it, only a small proportion of data is actually being utilised. It's been estimated that less than 5% of available data is actually being used. The Commission also found that there's a lack of trust by both data holders and data users around data access processes and protection. The existing privacy legislation and secrecy provisions are overly restrictive when it comes to sharing and releasing data. Finally, Australia's provision of open access to private and public sector data is well behind similar countries. So, for example, in the UK, there's the My Data Scheme, which is a government initiative which brings together voluntary data sharing within the private sector between consumers, privacy groups and businesses. And the idea is that it gives consumers access to their own data in machine-readable format, and they can see what data organisations collect about them, and they can also provide this data to other organisations to find products and services that suit them best. In New Zealand, the integrated data infrastructure brings together many sources of data across the public sector. So that includes health, justice, education, welfare and accident compensation data. And that's really to inform government decision making to deliver better outcomes. So many of these findings apply equally to injury and disability schemes. While a wide variety of data is currently being used by schemes, this only makes up a very small subset of a larger universe of data potentially available to support decision making. So I'll talk through the data framework in a bit more detail, but this is sort of an overview. The framework introduces legislation in the form of the Data Sharing and Release Act. And the Act is intended to govern access, sharing and release of data, and it's meant to complement existing federal and state legislation. The legislation would be supported by two elements which would be created by this Act, and that's the Comprehensive Consumer Rights and the Data Sharing and Release System, a risk-based framework for doing that. The framework also introduces new participants. The National Data Custodian would be responsible to guide and monitor the data system. Accredited release authorities who'd have the power to share or release certain public sector data sets, and a trusted user model that applies controls to determine who actually can access these data sets. The Commission also recommends involvement from the ACCC, Ombudsman and relevant agencies. So what is a consumer right? So the DSR Act introduces what they call a comprehensive right for consumers, and consumers include both individuals and small and medium-sized business. It gives consumers greater control over their own data. So the Act gives the data holder and the consumer joint rights to access and use the consumer's data instead of the current situation where consumers have very limited access to data that's been collected about them. So consumers can receive copies of their own data, they can request corrections, they need to be informed when their data is traded or disclosed, and they can instruct data holders to transfer their data in a machine-readable format to a third party. And this right applies to both private and public sector data. The ACCC has a role to play in terms of educating consumers on the new right, assessing the levies charged by data holders, and handling complaints. And then the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner continues to have responsibility for compliance with the Privacy Act. So what the new right really means for consumers is that the transfer of data will be safer and more convenient and will enable greater competition, which could promote innovation. So data release is currently governed by federal and state privacy legislation, as well as more than 500 secrecy provisions that are spread across a variety of specific legislation. So the Commission believes that all this legislation and provisions have created a culture which is overly restrictive in terms of data sharing. And it's not so much that you can't share data, but there's so many hurdles and a lot of fear of non-compliance that it's just really resulted in very limited data sharing. What the Commission wants is to move to a culture of pushing out data in a very coordinated way, and part of this is captured in this comprehensive consumer right. The framework also includes a risk-based framework for sharing and release of data. So the idea is that you manage the risk of data release or misuse depending on the nature of the actual data. So if it's higher risk identifying data, that would be restricted to a group of trusted users only, but low risk data would be released and would be widely available and accessible. So the Act would authorise data custodians and ARAs to share and release data despite the terms of other laws, as long as it's done to achieve a public interest purpose and is in compliance with the safeguards set out by the Act. As I mentioned, the Act establishes three key participants. So the National Data Custodian would be responsible for providing national guidance on data release in areas such as risk management, data security, methods of de-identification. They'd be responsible for accrediting bodies, which would be responsible for data release, and they'd decide which high-value data sets would be considered to be of national interest. There'd likely be state and territory bodies that are experts for their specific sector. They'd coordinate state and federal government agencies and data holders to integrate data sets across their specific sector. And then there's the trusted user model, whereby ARAs assess and allow certain trusted users to access and use sensitive or identifiable data. And trusted users would include individuals, personnel in government agencies or research bodies who meet certain governance standards and requirements such that they can be given access to sensitive data that's not suitable for open release. They'd have to sign a legal undertaking that sets out the safeguards for data use, and they'd only be able to access data in a secure computing environment. So the Commission also recommends the creation of national interest data sets. These data sets would be given priority and focus in terms of data sharing and release, and they'd be given funding to actually curate these data sets. The data sets would be selected because they're expected to generate additional benefits to the nation. So there's some key criteria. They need to cover a high degree of the population. The data needs to offer clearly described benefits to the public and be able to generate broader economic and social benefits. And they need to focus on nationally significant subject matter. So, for example, education. The creation of the NIDs will likely involve linkage, integration or transformation, and they may need to be supplemented by private sector data, such as health, utilities, education data. And the data sets are intended to be used as a basis for performance evaluation and comparison between programs by the Commonwealth government, states or territories. So some examples of potential national interest data sets could include data on the MBS, admin data such as driver's licences and hospitals data. Some of the other key recommendations are that government agencies are to release non-personal and non-confidential data for widespread use, including information that identifies individuals if that's already in the public domain. Non-sensitive NIDs are to be released immediately. A central government agency in each jurisdiction is to be given responsibility to maintain a system where government agencies and researchers and private sector can nominate data sets to be allocated as high-value national interest data sets, and access should be allowed to identifiable individual information without them consenting where research would be in the public interest. And the private sector is to determine their own sector-specific standards for data sharing. So that's a lot of stuff that has to happen, and the Commission has proposed a very ambitious timeline for implementation. So by the end of 2017, a central agency is to be established at each of the federal and state or territory levels with responsibility for actually implementing the new framework. By May next year, all publicly funded entities should have published comprehensive data registries. And at this point, a draft DSR Act, including an initial list of NIDs, should be prepared. The Act should be passed by the end of 2018, and from 2019 onwards, the National Data Custodian and the accredited release authorities should be up and running, the ARAs should be managing the NIDs, lots of acronyms, and the comprehensive right for consumers should be enforced by the ACCC. And then by 2020, consistent data standards should be used across the public sector.
Thanks, Anjali. I'll be talking about the implications that the new framework will have on injury and disability schemes. I will give some examples of possibilities that can be unlocked with the introduction of this new framework for the schemes, and talk through some of the risks and challenges that could be brought about by making data more available, and then sort of give a quick wrap-up of what we'd like you to take away today from our talk. So, what implications will the framework have on injury and disability schemes? We can think of three elements of the framework that will impact on schemes directly. The first is with regards to the new consumer right that's going to be introduced. So that should theoretically make it much more easier for scheme participants to switch between service providers. It should mean greater competition, improvement in the delivery of services, and more innovation. The second element is with regards to the national interest data sets, the NIDs. So it wouldn't be difficult to argue that data that can be used to improve the efficiency, the operations and outcomes of schemes is of public interest. So what would such data sets for a scheme actually look like? Would it be a national data set that includes data from similar schemes of different jurisdictions linked together? Could it also then extend into outside scheme data outside of the scheme? So, for example, you could link up with health data or welfare data. Or could it even include data from private sector if that data can be proved to provide insights? The third element is with respect to the provision in the framework that allows for identifiable data relating to individuals to be used without their consent for public interest research. So again, that could open up a lot of extra data that schemes can be using for scheme research. So let us for the moment assume that the framework is implemented effectively and we end up with a culture and an environment where there's an abundant availability of data, there is a lot of sharing of data, and at that stage, we enter into data heaven. In this utopia, more and better analysis is being done on the data, and it's bringing a lot of insights to schemes. What kind of possibilities could that open up for schemes? We've thought about some possibilities from the angle of injury prevention as well as injury management. So we're going to share some examples now. It's only a subset of the ones that are in our paper, so if you want to know more, you can go to our paper. So from an injury prevention perspective, one of the areas that we think, the possibilities can be opened up is with regards to data on the health of an individual and their behaviour with respect to health. Studies have shown that an individual's health can be linked to their incidence of injuries and, I guess, the severity of the injury. So, for example, people who are overweight, they may be more likely to fall or trip over, or if they do fall and trip over, their injury might be more severe. There's also studies that have linked obesity to sleep apnea, which has an impact on motor accidents. Now, with the advance of technology, we now have wearable devices, we have smart devices, we have health apps that collect a lot of data on people's health, their diets, the exercise that they're doing. And so how can this data that's being used to monitor people's behaviour be used to benefit schemes? We know that in the corporate world, there's already something like this happening where you may not have heard of the Qantas Assure program. So basically that's a program where if you sign up, you can earn points for the amount of exercise that you do. And then if you purchase an insurance policy with Qantas, you can use those points towards paying off your premium. So if we try to apply that in a workers' compensation context, for example, employers could decide to offer employees some kind of health benefit or a well-being program, and schemes could consider offering these employers a premium discount. And that in turn would incentivise employers to offer more employers to offer these schemes to their employees and therefore hopefully drive down the incidence of claims. Another example is with employee satisfaction. So again, there have been studies that have linked employee satisfaction with the incidence of injuries at work. Employees who are stressed might suffer more likely to suffer from psychological injuries, but also physical injuries, because people who are stressed, they have built tension up in their muscles, they can be experiencing some back pain and so forth. So if it was possible for employees to present evidence to schemes that they are performing well in terms of their employee satisfaction surveys, then again, schemes could consider offering employers a premium discount. And that would then encourage employers to build better relationships with their employees or find out where the stress points are and eliminate those. And then claims experience should improve. Another example is with respect to GPS and camera data. So in the new age, workers are often not always working in the office. They're working from home, or they might be working from a cafe. And whilst this flexibility might be a good thing, it's becoming more and more difficult for employers to have more control over the working environment. Again, technology has advanced, and there are now these... First of all, we can use GPS data to sort of identify instances where the worker might not be working in the office. And then in terms of camera data, there are now these devices which are called structure sensors, which you can attach to the camera of an iPad, and you can literally do a scan of the room or the environment that you're working in. And there's an app called Canvas, which currently is being used predominantly by interior designers, which can basically use that data to create a 3D image of the room. And it's quite accurate in that you can actually then measure the size of the room, the dimension of furniture, and so forth. So it wouldn't be that hard possibly to create an app in a workers' compensation sense, which would help, you know, alert the worker to, you know, is your sort of furniture set up ergonomic? Is there sufficient lighting? Are there tripping hazards that are lying on the floor? And so that kind of data can then be used for risk assessment purposes. With respect to employer claims track record, this one is a bit out there. So the idea here is that, especially in sort of high-risk, labour-intensive industries, if it was possible to collect and publish data on the past claims track record of these employers, then that would allow prospective workers to take that into consideration when they're deciding whether they want to join an employer, so whether that employer is providing a safe working environment, and that in turn would incentivise employers to improve their claims experience to attract the best talent. In terms of injury management, data can be used to provide to create benchmarks for service providers. So an example there is if it was possible to collect from service providers some information on, for example, the recovery rates or recovery times of certain injuries, then that could be used to create benchmarks, and that could be used by service providers to compare their own experience against the benchmarks. It could be used by scheme participants to understand how long it might take them to recover, and therefore work with their employer to prepare for their return to work. It could be used by schemes to better project claims costs or reconsider how they might want to remunerate service providers. These benchmarks could be constructed not just at the scheme level, it could be, you know, at a national level across schemes, or it could even be constructed out of international data. In terms of a service provider marketplace, the idea here was that we could have a platform similar to Airtasker. So a scheme could upload cases or injuries that need to be managed onto a platform, and service providers could bid to manage these claims for a specified fee, for a specified outcome. There could be ratings and reviews in that platform to give an indication of the past track record of the service provider. It could also lead to a more efficient allocation of resources. So you may be able to identify that, oh, in this specific geographical region, there's a shortage of certain service providers, or in this particular injury type or condition, we need sort of more suppliers there. with respect to data from other organisations, so there can obviously be quite a lot of benefit of sharing of data between, or de-identified data between schemes of different jurisdictions, but if we thought outside of that, so if it was possible to link, for example, workers' compensation data with health data, for example, you might get a lot of insight out of things like what's the best practice of treatment for particular injuries or the expected recovery times. We know that some schemes, as they track the outcomes of scheme participants, the methods that they're currently using is to use a survey or to, use long questionnaires to understand the outcomes of the claimant or the scheme participant. But another way that that could be done is if it was possible, for example, to link workers' compensation data with taxation data and welfare data. Well, once that claim is closed from the scheme, if that person has returned to work, then they would be earning income and therefore paying tax, and you would be able to see that in the tax data. If they weren't able to return to work and rely on social welfare, then you would be able to see them in the welfare data as well. And that would also facilitate more seamless transition for the claimant between the different systems, because the welfare scheme would already have their information. And last example I want to share is with regards to sharing of experience and information. So at the moment, this occurs mostly in the health space, where people with certain health conditions, they can go online onto a sort of health chat forum or a chat room, virtual chat room, to share experience about the condition that they have, some of the experiences they have and the difficulties that they have. And at the moment, my understanding is that a lot of drug companies are using technology like web scraping and text mining to pull out the words from these forums as well as from tweets and posts and so forth, and they can then make sense of all of this to try and identify side effects from the use of drugs and medication. So how can that be used, say, in an injury disability schemes context? If there was like a chat room for scheme participants to talk about, their difficulties and their experience, that data could provide a lot of insights in terms of what treatments are working, what types of treatments aren't working, what types of difficulties are the claimants or the scheme participants experiencing, and that kind of information could then provide insights for future scheme design or benefit design. So we've talked a lot about what it might be like in data heaven, so it's now time to come back to Earth. Because although it's possible to argue that some of the examples that we've given is of the public interest if it does go towards improving schemes and reducing injuries, some of the examples we've given probably won't work in terms of it might not fly in terms of people agreeing that that's the best thing to do. So, for example, you can't really force employers to sort of give their employee satisfaction surveys to schemes and so forth. So there's a lot of sort of privacy issues with all of that. Some of the examples that we've given, maybe some of it could already be done, but it's not currently being done. So what are the barriers to schemes sort of using more of the data that's available or sharing the data that's available? So we've identified risks and challenges from three participant perspectives. The first one is with respect to the individual and the community. So their main concern is to do with privacy and sort of fraud and identity theft and how their information will be used. So the solution to that is really to build trust in the community. So we've currently got some new changes to the Privacy Act, which requires any data breaches to be notified to individuals. There's some proposed amendments to the Privacy Act, which introduces heavy penalties for people who re-identify data that has been encrypted. And we also have the new consumer right provision, which is as part of the new framework, which requires data holders to notify consumers if they've shared their data with a third party. With respect to the concerns of data holders and providers, I think their main concern is that the penalties that are associated with data breaches, and also with the sort of myriad of sort of legal barriers and so forth to the linking and sharing of data. So the key there is to not let sort of the risk aversion culture take over, but to really proactively manage the risk. So some of the things that can be done there is we know that the National Data Custodian and the ARAs, they will be developing best management, risk management practices and publishing those. They will also be providing guidance on the best practice of de-identifying data. The new framework also introduces the trusted user model, which should put some governance around how sensitive data will be handled and used. And there's also the requirement for a secure computing environment to be used when handling data, which should also reduce risk. And lastly, with regards to the data users, their main concern is to do with data discoverability and also data usability. So at the moment, there's a lot of, especially in the sort of public sector, the framework will require all the public sector agencies to publish data registries of the data they actually hold so that people know what they actually collect and what's available for use. And also in terms of data standards, at the moment there might be different data sets held by public sector agencies. They might have similar variables in them but with slightly different definitions, or the formats are slightly different so that it's very difficult to link up the data. So the framework says that all the public sector agencies have to comply with certain data standards so that it's sort of standardised across different data sets. And as well as that, there will be more data linkage entities that are established to link up data, and the ARAs will be curating and maintaining and publishing the data on a regular basis. So just to sum up, what we'd like for you to get out of today's talk is that, firstly, be aware that the productivity has commissioned this inquiry and they have recommended a new framework which should change the culture and attitudes to data, the availability of data and the usage of data. We feel that this new framework should mean that there will be more data available and that more and better analysis will be done on the data and provide insights that benefit the whole of community and society. And really, injury and disability scheme should really be part of that. There are some challenges that come with the increased availability of data, and we've talked about the risks, but we feel that it's nothing that can't be combated with the right sort of risk management practices. So what are the next steps for schemes? We think that schemes should really start preparing for the arrival of this new framework, and the way to do that is firstly to seriously consider what they can actually do now without the implementation of the new framework. So what kind of benefits could result out of things that they can actually currently do? Secondly is to have a think about, well, What kind of barriers are stopping them from doing more with the data that's available? And then thirdly, consider what extra additional benefits could come from the introduction of the new framework. And if these are substantial, then they might consider lobbying the government for speedier implementation of the framework, or lobbying them for the types of data that should be considered for inclusion in a national interest data set for schemes. Thank you.
Well, thanks very much. That was a really interesting talk. Now, I had a chance to read the Productivity Commission report on the way up in the plane. I got through all 740 pages or so. no, I didn't. I read the summary report, though. One of the things that kind of intrigued me was that it was all kind of... some of the examples that they used in the report was around the benefits to the health sector, sharing data between various providers in the health sector. And I guess some of those concepts apply equally well to compensation. I don't have a question, but I was just going to take a straw poll. I mean, if you had a workers' comp claims, hands up if you'd be prepared to share your, you know, previous GP, psychiatrist visits, any life insurance information that was available, anything that was sort of virtually, tangibly relevant to your claim. Would you want that to be shared with your workers' compensation scheme or authority or insurer? Hands up if you would. Awesome. Okay, I think that that's probably lower than the public generally would, but that's good.
Shared de-identified data.
Shared de-identified, but not identified, not about yourself. Okay. How many people have got Facebook or other social media accounts? Okay, interesting. All right. Now, I'll just open up the... It doesn't have medical information, but it does know where I am. So we've got time for some questions, which is great. The timing was perfect. If you could please use the microphone to ask your questions because the session is being recorded. I'll leave it up to you to come up to the mic. No questions? All right. Oh, Tim. Microphone, please.
So the framework and everything feels great. One of the things that occurred to me, though, is the secure computing services that you require. A lot of the stuff that is being grunted through is on Amazon and all the web-based, the cloud-based stuff. Are they deemed secure? And if not, you need the grunt power to do some of this analysis. Is the Commonwealth Government going to build a server farm somewhere that's going to give us access to secure computing?
In terms of the national interest data sets, there'll be specific funding that's streamed for just that. So that's why there'd be a lot of interest in getting them put forward as national interest data sets, because there would be funding for continued curation and that sort of thing. In terms of setting up secure labs funded by the Commonwealth, they have mentioned that, and we've not seen that in any of sort of the readings we've done.
So I think in the report they did say that they will require a sort of secure computing environment for, I think it's probably handling and analysis maybe of the data. So that they gave an example, was just called the secure, the SHAW system. So I don't know whether anyone's used to that, but basically I think it's a remote access sort of a system that, and there's sort of strict requirements around. I think it logs everything from, you know, is data being taken out of there and data going in and things like that. So I don't know much about it because I've not used it, but it does talk about the SHAW system in the report.
I can see the benefits to society of this type of approach, but can you see any compelling reasons for individual organisations to share data? A lot of work.
So I'm not sure whether you mean whether it's sharing with, like, contributing to the national interest data sets, or whether you're referring to something else. So in terms of the new comprehensive right, I mean, that's something that's being brought in, and I don't think individual organisations, if they are data holders, that they have much say on that, because basically they will have to be able to provide machine-readable formats of the consumer's data back and to their competitors if that's required. In terms of incorporation into national interest data sets, I think that mostly relation to sort of sectors which are heavily governed by government, so things like education, health, possibly insurance, the utilities and so forth. So, again, I think, you know, if they decide that these, or if there's lobbying, which says that these private sector data sets are important, and are of public interest, then I think that will have to happen. Sorry.
No, that's the question I had. Thank you.
Alrighty, I think we're probably out of time for questions, but if you do have anything for Anjali and Sylvia, then there are plenty of breaks you can find them around. So please thank them once again for a brilliant talk on the report.